Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is the Coast to Coast Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Fitch, and today we're going to talk NBA playoffs, basketball, and if I have time, I'm going to talk about the NBA draft and who is the big winner, who's on the rise in the NFL. Not quite yet, but it's a team I have in mind I want to talk about. I'm going to have Andrew Floor on. He writes for the Golden State Warriors. We're going to talk about Dub Nation. But first, I'm going to talk about the team I picked to come out of the East, the Miami Heat, and they survived against the Charlotte Hornets. D-Wade, what can I say about Dwayne Wade? He was outstanding. The Miami Heat survived down in this series, 3-2. They win 97-90. D-Wade had 23 points. Five of those points were the biggest moments of the Heat season when the Heat were leading by 15. Then the Hornets cut the lead because Kemba Walker went off again, 37 points. He just was hard to deal. He's been hard to deal with for the Heat. And he made a shot, and Wade made a shot, and he made a shot. Wade made a big three, hadn't hit a three until December 16th. Then he hit a really, really, two really tough shots over Lee, who played him tight. And then he talked a little stuff to the guy with the purple shirt who should not be on the court. You can't have a fan that close to the player on the court. What if you run into a knucklehead-type NBA player? What if he ran into J.R. Smith? And J.R. Smith loses control and decks the fan? They have to talk to fan man or the purple fan shirt or whatever the geek's name is. I know he was full of glory in his geekdom, getting attention on ESPN, but you can't have that. And you know, and it also fired the other team up. It looked like it motivated Wade to survive 97-90, and they play at home in Game 7. I expect them to win. I'm not guaranteeing any win, but I just think that type of win, when you come back from the dead and you're willing to, for lack of a better word, go through hell and back on the road and pull out a tough road win, it fortifies your team. It shows you have intestinal fortitude. And it does something to your team. You know, and Luol Deng has been having a great series, 21 points. He was outstanding. He's been outstanding the whole series. And even Jason Richardson, the young kid, he's playing good. Al Jefferson's been a pain. I know if Miami wins, they're going to be tired. I'm glad to see him gone. But Jeremy Lin only getting 8 points was big. They didn't allow him to go crazy. He was 1 of 8 from the field. I thought their defense on him, because he's been hurting them, it was big. And Batum didn't go off. So that was huge for the Heat. And I was impressed with the way the Miami Heat played. And I believe this win, I didn't think they were going to win this game. I thought that the Hornets would get them at home. I think that they win a game that people thought they were going to lose. I think this is going to propel them into this conference championship. I think they're going to beat the winner of Toronto and Indiana in a really tough another tough series. And Indiana won yesterday. 101-83. They basically won a 30-20 in the third quarter, 30-19 in the fourth quarter. Everybody contributed. Monte Ellis hit a couple of jump shots to help Paul George, and I think that was big. And Lowry is just struggling, 4-14 from the field. That's not acceptable. He's too good a player for that. You had other players that were big. Monte Ellis with 14 points. And, you know, that was helpful. This Game 7, all the pressure was on Toronto. They're going back to Jurassic Park where they've lost the Game 7. They have the guy in the first round. They're playing. This is a one-game series for their coach's job. How much pressure can you get? I think they got to get out to a lead and keep it. Because if it gets to the fourth quarter, Paul George has his hands on the game, they're going home, and there's going to be pink slips flying, and DeRozan may be gone. And that could be a mess. And then Drake could be sitting there sad. But if they win, then they most likely could play Miami, and that's going to be a very interesting matchup, to say the least. But I know if the Heat win, they'll be glad to see Kemba Walker leave town if they win Sunday at 1. Now, the Clippers and the Portland Trail Blazers beat the LA Clippers 106-103. The Clippers were at Chris Paul and Griffin. They fought hard. Rivers played well. But it just wasn't good enough. Damian Lillard had 28 points. It was big time. Portland moves on. They would not have moved on if Griffin and Paul were healthy. I think that the Clippers would have won 6. But the Clippers have rotten luck. And then they make their own misfortune, too. This organization is snake bit core. And there's just, I don't know why they're so cursed. It's just they moved from Buffalo when they were the Buffalo Braves. And they've made the playoffs, but there's always some moment that set them back. And it sets them back. And then they got free agents coming up in the following year. So they may have one more chance, and then that's going to be it. And the window's going to be completely shut. I don't see them ever getting to the NBA Finals. It's just one of those kind of teams that is not built for long-term success. You know, Doc did all he could to coach them up, but it's just not meant to be. So we're going to get to the Atlanta Hawks, which I really like to talk about because I've been a big critic of all the Atlanta sports teams. They just don't have enough courage. They don't put enough heart in the playoffs. They don't have enough poise. This current team showed me a little something. Down 10 in Game 5 after being hit with haymakers in Boston, where Boston tied the series up. Down 10. No momentum. Looks like Boston's going to get Game 5 and move on. Everybody's playing well on Boston. Turner's cooking, percolating in that game, Evan Turner. And then the Hawks hit the Celtics with a 25-5 run between the second and third quarter that basically won the series because Kyle Korver got going, Kenny Bazemore, who's been great, got going. Mike Scott hit a lot of threes. Millsap was his usual self. Teague found his game a little bit. Schroeder hit some shots that he hadn't hit. And now the Hawks were cooking. And when they went to Boston, I felt like they were going to win because they had the momentum. And they were on a mission in that 10-game postseason streak against Boston. And they won 104-92. And a lot of times it was in the 20s, the lead. Al Horford hit some threes. And he's kind of expanded his game where he's hitting – deeper jump shot, not just the little mid-range game. So now he's a threat. And now the Hawks go into the Cleveland series with a lot of confidence, a lot of momentum. They got swept last year, so they know what they're dealing with. I believe they get 2 games from Cleveland. Cleveland wins a series of 6, so I figure LeBron's going to overwhelm them and Kyrie. It's just, if you think they had problems with dealing with Isaiah Thomas' penetration, wait till you get a load of Jack Nicholson and the Joker, wait till you get a load of me. As far as Kyrie Irving, he's going to be the biggest issue. The good news for Atlanta is Kyle Korver found a shot. So now Cleveland has a game. Tyronn Lue has a game plan that and make sure he doesn't get cooking. And Atlanta's shooting from the perimeter will help. They're going to need all the help they can get. They're going to need everybody to play well all at the same time. Any chance to pull off the biggest upset probably in the history of sports, next to Tyson and Buster Douglas, if they were going to do that. I think they're going to get 2 games and make the Cavaliers sweat a little bit, but I think Irvin Love and LeBron, and then I figure J.R. Smith shoots the ball well against Atlanta, so I'm going to pencil him in. He's all over. He's just inconsistent, and he's a bit of a knucklehead, but I think he's going to shoot well. And the 4 of them is like the 4-headed monster will be able to handle the Atlanta Hawks and move on to the conference finals. I think it's going to be Cleveland and Miami if everything holds up. At first, it wasn't. If Charlotte would have won, I think Cleveland would have an easy road to the finals. We had my favorite guest on. We have Andrew Flohr of the Golden State writer for SB Nation. What's going on, buddy? Dub Nation.
Dub Nation, not too much, Ron. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. What's Curry's status? Because he looked pretty good working out. I mean, he looks like he's healing fast.
Yeah, that's what everyone's hoping over here. You know, from what we know, it's the grade one MCL sprain, so that's anywhere from a couple days, which it has been already, to a couple weeks. The Warriors said they'd reevaluate after a couple weeks. So I think facing this Blazers team, you have the opportunity to give him at least a couple of days rest, see how the first couple games play out, and hopefully go from there, and they can reevaluate him after another week or so and really get a better idea of where his knee's at.
Let me tell you something about this team. And I felt like this before in the Game 5 of the Houston series. I said, this team's going to bring the hammer down in Game 5, and they're going to come out blazing. And that's exactly what it is. You know why? This team has intestinal fortitude. This goes beyond talent. They have a will about them where they're going to come out, okay, Steph Curry's gone. You think we're going to let up? Okay. Check how we're going to lay a 30-burger on the Houston Rockets and beat them by 30. And I believe they're going to beat up on Portland even without Curry because of their intestinal fortitude. And they have the very best backup point guard in the entire NBA in Sean Livingston.
I mean, there's a number of teams that I'm sure we could both throw out there where Sean Livingston could be their starting point guard and play, mm-hmm. you know, 25-plus minutes a game. Having him to be able to come off the bench and even in this situation start when you have your starting point guard go down is a huge luxury for them. He's very calm with the ball. He understands when he has an advantage over his defender. And on the flip side, I mean, with his length, he's a great defender himself. So you get to start off every game now with a really dynamic defensive lineup. And I think that's really going to help them against the Blazers backcourt that can really fill up the stat sheet. So I'm really interested in that matchup because both Klay Thompson and Livingston will have an advantage on the offensive end, but they'll have their hands full every time down the court on defense, especially with Damian Lillard getting a shot to come home playing the playoffs. I'm sure he's going to be really looking forward to this matchup on Sunday. It's going to be an exciting series, and It's hard not to like the Warriors' chances with how they did handle Houston. I mean, we were talking about this the other day. I think you have to give credit to the Warriors for stepping up in the absence of Curry, but you also have to look at it at the other end, and I think the Rockets kind of just, you know, mailed it in, especially with that comment by Terry. I think that was only going to work against them, saying that they
can't fire up a team like Golden State, guys like Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. You know what I want to talk about? I watched Portland against the Clippers, and I saw things I didn't like. I saw things I didn't like that they're not going to get away with Golden State. They could be very sloppy sometimes with the ball, and they were able to get away with that against the Clippers because Paul and Griffin were hurt. And even when they weren't, the Clippers didn't take advantage of it. You cannot do that against Golden State the way Golden State could run you off the court.
Yeah, and you've seen that a couple times when the Warriors have played the Blazers. Some of the games have been a little sloppy, and I think that comes into play when you get a guy like Curry going against Lillard. Both of those guys really want to push the tempo, especially at each other when they're guarding each other on the floor. We've seen the Warriors handle the ball a little more carefully with Livingston being in the lineup. They still like to push the tempo, but there's just not as much flashiness from the point guard, so you don't get as many of the crazy up-tempo turnovers. So I think if the Warriors can limit their turnovers and definitely still try and push the ball and get the Blazers to get into some turnovers on their end, that's really going to help ignite the Warriors' offense and not be good for Portland.
Definitely not. You know, I'm looking at Draymond Green's stats. 10 rebounds a game and 7 assists a game in the postseason. Give me your definition of what you see from Draymond Green.
I mean, I love the stats, but the thing I love most about him is just his intensity. Mm-hmm. Going back to game, I think it was 4 at Houston, Curry goes down in the second quarter, and Draymond Green comes out and just absolutely lights a fire under that entire Warriors team, just puffing his chest out, yelling, screaming. You can just tell that the way he attacks the game, the way he inspires his teammates, he is one of the great competitors in this league. And he is very emotional, but I think it really balances well for this team because there's so many guys that don't really show that emotion. But I think he can bring that out of guys like a Klay Thompson, who's probably a little more soft-spoken on the court. So he does a little bit of everything, and he's one of those guys who feels like he was kind of looked past going into the draft, and I think he really carries that chip on his shoulder all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets a chance to add another chip on the shoulder, like, you know, a star player like Curry going down, he probably takes a lot of pride in showing that his team is still very capable of doing big things in the playoffs.
That's exactly right. Andrew Bogut is kind of sneaky important to Golden State. He averages almost 2 blocks a game and around 6 rebounds a game. But he does a lot of little things. He'll back tap offensive rebounds where they get another possession and might hit a 3-point shot that might be a dagger. He does it, and he defends the big guys, and then he defends the rim, and he rebounds, and he does a lot of little things that seemed to go unnoticed. I wanted to put that out there and give him some love today on my show.
Yeah, you know, he's another guy where the stats aren't really going to really tell the full story of how important he is to this team. I think his greatest quality is probably his basketball IQ, and then right under that is his passing. You see him a lot of the time, mm-hmm. he'll initiate the offense at the top of the key. They've run a lot of off-ball movement, off-ball screens and cuts with Bogut at the top of the key, and I think that makes our team really, really dynamic because you're bringing the imposing team center out of the key and you're really freeing up the key area to get some good ball movement in there. And Bogut's very unselfish. He's not really doing it for the numbers. Like you said, you'd rather get a possession for the team than, you know, try and snatch up a rebound. So he's one of those guys that just contributes to the overall culture of the Warriors and really just wants to win. He's another guy that was kind of written off as being injury prone, and he was the number one pick in the league for a reason. He's an athletic 7-footer. He defends the rim with an attitude. You know, he will not back down to anybody, which is very important, especially coming from your defensive anchor. And in the playoffs at this point, you know, the first couple of years the Warriors finally made it to the playoffs. When Bogut was injured, they really missed him down there in the key because he just brings that extra little fire like Draymond where just they don't back down to people. And I think that goes a long way in the playoffs.
That definitely does. You know, now you're getting contributions from Ian Clark and Brandon Rush. That's going to make them doubly more tough when Curry comes back.
Yeah, you know, Brandon Rush, before his terrible knee injury a couple years ago, I really felt like he had the potential to be a sixth man of the year type player. I mean, he's super athletic. He can defend. He can shoot. It was just hard to see him come back from that injury. He had a really rough year last year, but seeing his growth from last year to this year is really promising, especially in the playoffs. You have to be able to play all 12 players in the playoffs. I mean, you look at guys like David Lee last year, had huge games in the finals where he came off deep off the bench. And even if it's, you know, 8-9 points in a game, that can really put a shot in the team's arm. And Ian Clark, the thing I like most about Ian Clark is just his hustle. He knows his position and his role. He knows that he needs to come in and just give it everything he has. Looking at the last game, he's diving all over the floor. It's good. I think that sends a message to the guys that are playing above him that he's setting the tone coming off the bench, so it really keeps the energy up for the other players.
Definitely. Now, I'm rolling the dice, and I mean rolling the dice, and I'm picking OKC over San Antonio against my better nature and against all logic. I got a hunch about OKC because of the other role players that have stepped up to help Durant and Westbrook. I got a feeling they could get San Antonio in 6. What do you think about that?
It'll be really fun to watch. I think like you said, mm-hmm. it basically comes down to their role players, because we know what Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook are capable of, but good teams like the Spurs can still win with those guys having great games if they can limit the role players' ability to score. You know, the Kevin Durant and Westbrook can go both for 30, but if nobody else is shooting well or defending, then that's going to be their weak spot. So if their role players can step up, I can definitely see that happening, because they're a great team when they do and really an average team when they don't. So it'll be interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Spurs had a pretty easy first round, so they've been waiting in the wings for them.
Now, before I let you go, were you happy about your Oakland Raiders and their, because the Oakland Raiders is on the rise. They're coming, and I think next year could be the year of a playoff run.
Yeah, I'm feeling that myself, especially with how the division's shaping up. The Broncos still have a great D, but without Peyton, it's definitely a different team. They really are trying to figure out their quarterback situation. It's really interesting, because as much as I really want them to get a new stadium, it'd be hard to see them go, even if it is to Vegas. That's such a touristy spot. I'd have to think there'd be a lot of opposing fans at all those games. But, you know, Mark Davis clearly wants a stadium, and I think they're going to do whatever they can to make that happen. But I'm definitely excited for the product that's going to be on the field. Reggie McKenzie has been making some great decisions in the offseason. They got some key players. They're starting to finally attract some free agent names, and I think you're really starting to see the culture overall in that organization get back to a winning culture, and it's really nice to see.
Definitely. I got to let you go. I appreciate the time you were on here, man. You are A+, bringing A game as usual.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon, all right?
Okay. That was Andrew Flower. He's great as usual. I love talking the people on the West Coast, and he was nice enough to call in, which is very early, and around 7-ish his time. I do want to talk about the NFL, and I want to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think Gus Bradley is making moves. I think Jacksonville they're going to be good. I don't know if they're going to be quite a playoff team, but the following year, I think they're going to be that team that makes that series. Blake Bortles is good. A great draft pick in Jalen Ramsey. Kudos to this team. I love what they did. Really, really, really love what they did. I like what the Cowboys did getting Ezekiel Elliott. And what San Francisco did and getting DeForest Buckner. I love what Buffalo did. From the kid from Clemson, who's really good, and he's a defensive tackle. I love what Minnesota did getting Laquon Treadwell, and he's going to be a stud receiver. All this nonsense about his 40 speed, this guy gets past defenders. He's a great route runner. He's big and strong. He's going to go at Adrian Peterson and the rest of that receiving core. Now it's up to Teddy Bridgewater to develop. He can develop. Minnesota is going to be a problem. They already made the playoffs. They're on the rise. And Denver getting past the Lynch was good. I think they take a little step back because, you know, he's going to develop in the future. You got your quarterback in the future. I love Paxton Lynch. I love his IQ. I love his mobility. And even though, you know, at Memphis, you don't play a lot of great teams, but they pulled off a couple of upsets against bigger teams last year. So I like Paxton Lynch to do really, really, really good. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. You know, and I rarely talk about hockey, but I'm going to tell you something. I am very much into this Washington-Pittsburgh Penguin series because of the fact that you got Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby, and they do not like each other from what I heard. So that's always great. They're battling. I think that's going to be a seven-game series where, because Washington is at home, I'm going to say Washington wins in seven. They got off to a good start winning. game one, 4-3 against the Pens. And Oshie was big. TJ Oshie was really the man, even more so than Alexander Ovechkin, who he basically had a hat trick, 3 goals. I mean, he was big time. And that's what they're going to need to win. I believe this is the year that the Washington Capitals get to the Stanley Cup Finals. I have a friend who really likes the Islanders. I think the Islanders get there. Washington gets there. Washington finally beats the Islanders. They don't really have a good history of beating the Islanders in the playoffs. And then they get to the Stanley Cup Finals. And the city of Washington could use that. They've been kind of snake bit too, between the Wizards and the Bullets, formerly known as the Bullets. The Washington Nationals consistently underachieving. And the Mets, they're only a half a game back. They're going to catch them and pass them and beat them. I kind of know what happens with the Nationals. This is the only hope for D.C. is the Capitals of a team that could get you a championship. I mean, other than the Redskins in 91, the last team other than the Redskins was the Washington Bullets in 78. So it's just they're due. You hope for the city that they can something good could happen. And I think this is the Capitals have consistently underachieved. I just have a hunch they're gonna do good. Well, Monday I'll talk more draft. I'm gonna try to get Matt Lode on to talk about the really the Indians, the Cavaliers, and the Browns. So until Monday.